Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT for January 16th, 2024. We're talking NXT after we just had a Women's Royal Rumble, Royal Rumble's coming up in a couple of weeks. We had a Women's Battle Royal to determine the number one contender for Lyra Valkyria's World our NXT Women's Championship. We saw which I thought was a fantastic match here. We wound up seeing why can't I think of the winner? We Roxanne Perez. I'm like going through my notes. I want to say Kalani Jordan. I'm like Kalani because that's who I wanted to win. And I'm like, no, it completely came out of my brain there. But we saw Roxanne Perez go over She's going to be going to Vengeance Day as number one contender. We're going to see her next week in a contract signing with Lyra Valkyria. It's going to be interesting to see how they build this up in 1 week. I'm assuming, you know, that there's going to be some sort of altercation at said contract signing, but not that that ever happens in wrestling or anything like that. Before we get too deep into the woods, here to talk with me about NXT tonight is Bruce Hazelwood. Bruce, say hey.
Hey everybody, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me at B_Lee253. I did not do the report tonight. That was Kelly's. So you can find that at the Torch, but I will be doing it next week. And did you want me to discuss the main event, or did you want to take it from there?
Oh, just jump right in. Go for it.
Okay, sure. So last week in my report, I wrote that this is a perfect chance to put someone who you're not going to have win, but at least give them a highlight match coming out of this. And I said, oh. The three people I named as possibilities were Kiana James, Izzy Dame, and Carmen Petrovic. Obviously, we saw Petrovic's next feud is going to be with Bill Davenport, or possibly even Ariana Grace after what happened in the Battle Royal tonight. For a Battle Royal of what we saw, there were two commercial breaks during this. So, and for me, you know, I use the internet player, so I don't get to see the split screens, but it seemed to go pretty smoothly. You still had your standard spots that you would expect, but nothing seemed to go haphazardly in the match tonight. Now, when it came down to the final four, I thought, all right, Kiana James or Kalani Jordan's going to win, because either with Kiana James, for one, let me get this out the way first, all right? I love Roxanne Perez, going back to her days as Roxy in Ring of Honor, okay? But I don't think this was the right decision to put her over here. So I thought that either James or Kalani Jordan should have been the ones to go over with James. Of the other three, James is the one who is most advanced right now in terms of the skill set, and you get the heel-face matchup easily. With Jordan, you could go with the upstart face going off against the honorable face champion and have the highlight match. They, you know, get the rub even from the loss by having a good showing. Sort of like how OTM lost their tag team championship match to the family, I think it was last week or the week before, but coming out of that match, people were talking about OTM and not necessarily the champion, right? So I thought you could have gone that way here. And the reason I don't really feel like it was the right decision with, I guess there are multiple reasons, for Roxanne Perez is, one, I've been saying for many months now that her and Tyler Bate are basically the same. They disappear, they come in for a feud, they lose, repeat cycle. And if your solution to someone's character not having anything to do or not having any creative or not having any development is to just have them win a sudden number one contenders match, I don't think that's the right booking strategy, right? The other reason is that I'm not sure what more Perez gets out of this than what you could have done with Kiana James or Kalani Jordan. Bate is now on, I think, SmackDown. I think the best move for Perez would have just to have her go into the Royal Rumble and from there be on Raw or SmackDown afterward, not necessarily have her tied to NXT a little longer. Although, I mean, we saw Dragon Lee tonight. We thought he was going to be gone. So,
no, sorry, who did you say was on SmackDown? I missed the name. It kind of
Tyler Bate.
Okay, Tyler Bate. All right, thank you.
Yeah, him and the soon-to-be unnamed Butch, it seems like. So, for me, I just feel like there were better decisions. And, okay, maybe they have more confidence in Roxanne Perez right now. And I'm sure they do. Amazing wrestler. She should put out a great match with Lyra Valkyria. But if they're not going to win anyway, why not give the position to someone who has more to gain from it than the former, the only former women's champion in that Final Four? And I know Vic said that Kalani Jordan's in there with three other champions, but Henley and Kiana James were tag team champions. So I feel like that, look, maybe that I'll eat my words, and this is actually what they should have done. But to me, I feel like James or Jordan, and I'm just kind of questioning this, the match itself was good. For a battle royal, it was probably, you know, right in the middle or just above average. Nothing bad, nothing too corny, none of those things. It was just a perfectly fine TV battle royal. But I just questioned the booking decision here at the end.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I liked the match itself. There's a few spots in there, like Lash Legend using Tatum Paxley as a battering ram to kind of hit a couple of people. I forget who it was she actually hit with Tatum Paxley, but
It was Roxanne Perez and someone else, but
yeah.
Talk about most improved. Lash Legend has really come far
where
she was.
Big time. Yeah, I couldn't remember who it was she hit, but I guess, okay, yes, one Roxy and somebody else before delivering that massive powerbomb. You know, so there were definitely a couple cool spots in there, but I agree with you. I think Roxanne Perez, it felt like a very flat ending. You know, probably, I mean, for a lot of the reasons that you outlined. I mean, you know, Roxanne Perez, she's kind of been... I mean, they've given her some more TV time as of late. She's undergoing some character development and changes, being a little bit more heelish, kind of. You know, I've even said that, you know, I expected to see Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade reunite, but that's probably not going to happen anytime soon, Cora Jade being out with an ACL tear. So there's that. But which actually brings up the point, like, I'm wondering if Cora Jade was maybe even potentially supposed to win this. You know, I mean, it makes sense. Heel versus face, you know, Lyra Valkyria face as champion. So, you know, and she was kind of getting a little bit of a push as of late. It wouldn't have surprised me if she was set to win this. Maybe that's why Roxy seems like a little bit of a, you know, a letdown, because it wasn't necessarily the way it was supposed to go or whatever. I don't know. Totally just spitballing. That just was a thought that came into my mind as my gums are flapping. But yeah, you know, Kalani Jordan, Kiana James, I think one of the two of them really, really could have used this. And Kalani Jordan wouldn't have made a whole lot of sense if you're talking, you know, heel face dynamics, championship match, but you can do a face-face championship match, and it can certainly work. But I kind of, even though I wanted her to win and I was really rooting for her, I really didn't give her much of a chance of winning. I really thought, you know, when it came down to the Final Four, I really thought it was going to be Kiana James. That's really what I expected. I think she probably could have used this a little bit more than, or probably a lot more than Roxanne Perez, but I am willing to see where they're going with this. I'm hoping that it's more than just 2 weeks of TV, you know, between next week. Well, actually, sorry, I guess it's one week of TV. And then I was thinking Vengeance Day is next Wednesday, but I forgot it's a Saturday PLE. So, you know, I want to see exactly how they're going to build this up in just 1 week. It almost seems like it's the beginning of a feud, not necessarily the end of, I guess, the start and end of a feud in a couple of weeks. I'm almost wondering if we're going to see Lyra and Roxy kind of continue this feud after Vengeance Day. But yeah, overall it was a fun battle royal. We haven't seen one in NXT in a little bit, so I'm fine with it. Plus, we're coming up onto Royal Rumble season, so yeah, battle royals, Royal Rumbles galore. It's fine. One thing that I wanted to point out with this match, and something I don't recall seeing in a battle royal before, is the fact that when they got down to the last four, they turned it into a fatal four-way. I can't say that that's the first time they've done it. I don't remember personally seeing that before in WWE. But I actually like that. It kind of switches the matchup a little bit towards the end. Because especially with the Battle Royal, you start watching a Battle Royal and you've got people trying to throw each other off the top rope. And it's just, it looks very staged and it looks very phony in a lot of ways. Whereas you kind of come towards the end there and it looked much more hard hitting and things like that. So I think this is a great match. I've really liked the end stipulation there, kind of turning it into a fatal four-way. So,
well, real quick on the build for Valkyrie and Perez now. So,
yes,
if you're worried about having the heel face dynamic, the thing at least here is very easily in their contract signing next week, you could have Roxanne Perez legitimately turn on the fans in Full Sail because, I mean, what, for 8 months or so now, they've been booing her over and over again. So, to me, that... I don't know how well Perez would do as a heel, but she has been adding more attitude and more sort of heel mannerisms to her character the last several months. So this could be a way to just have her fully turn face or fully turn heel. And, you know, you were someone who didn't receive her face run very well, just like we didn't receive Braun Breaker's face run very well. But as a heel, he's been doing much better, and we can get to the interaction later tonight. But
just, I think, my favorite part of the show, and I can't believe I'm about to say that.
we might see something similar with Roxanne Perez coming up, but, you know, I think if they want to have that standard face heel dynamic, then that's the way to go. So I wouldn't be surprised next week if that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think Roxy, from what we've seen so far of her, just little character shifts and the little heel, kind of heel work that's come out over the past, I don't know, let's call it 6 weeks for sake of argument. Might be longer than that, but I can't remember. I like what we've seen. It hasn't been, you know, that happy-go-lucky Roxy. I almost kind of equate it back to Bayley, you know, Bayley in NXT. It, towards the end of her run in NXT, the hugger gimmick was already kind of maybe getting a little stale. It kind of never really flourished on the main roster. But then she started, you know, she turned heel, and I mean, she really took off. I didn't think Bayley had it in her, to be honest with you, from what I knew about her and everything. But she, I mean, God, Bayley right now is one of my all-time favorites I wouldn't say all-time favorite, but one of my current favorites in the WWE system right now. I think Roxanne Perez, from what we've seen, I think she might be able to do it. I think it might still be a bit of a challenge or whatnot for her, but I'm for it. I kind of like what you laid out, you know, about her potentially turning on the fans, for booing her, because it makes sense. I mean, it's something that, you know, WWE and I'm sure other wrestling promotions have done in the past. So, you know, it's not like a brand new idea or anything like that, but it's also kind of rooted in reality. It's weird. I have a basketball hoop that when you hit it, it makes a cheering noise, and I don't know why it just went off, but it did. So I don't know if you heard that or not, but that just scared the crap out of me.
No, you kind of just went out for a few seconds on me, actually.
Oh, all right. That's probably why. The noise canceling was probably, what the hell is that? That ghostly thing just kind of completely threw me off my whatever I was talking about. So do you remember what I was talking about?
It was about Perez and Valkyria.
Yeah. Wow. All right. We'll just move on because oh my God, that was weird. Yeah, like it's just this little plastic basketball hoop I got that somebody gave me as a gag gift for Christmas, and like it went off next. Like, it's just sitting here on my desk. It just went off. Like it's got batteries in it. It makes cheering noises. Weird. Anyway, all right. Let's move on here. Do we have any emails? I didn't check to see if we have emails. Let me do that real quick. We do, and we're going to go to two of them are spam. So I opened one. All right, we got one email from Kevin Catani. Kevin says, "Salutations, gents. Hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight was another solid episode. In general, the storytelling continues to be strong. I like that the LWO got a W, and I hope they get a good run if they're going to be in NXT for a spell. That said, was I the only one scratching my head during that Battle Royal? I can't imagine how much fun it was to recap. Now we'll have to ask Kelly next week. There was so much going on, and the announcers had a hard time keeping up. Even with all that, I'm puzzled at the outcome. Was Roxanne supposed to win? I don't know. I was questioning that myself, Kevin. It seemed like a weird finish with a delayed three count, but I couldn't fully tell. Is Roxanne due for a call-up? Is this her putting Lyra over on her way out? With Cora actually hurt, I'm just not sure about that finish. What do y'all make of it? I wish I'd read this before we talked about everything, because most of the stuff I think we've already covered here. So thanks as always. Listen to 8YB and go VIP. Office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Is there anything that you wanted to cover on that? I think we've actually talked about everything already in this email.
Well, regarding if Perez was supposed to win.
Maybe not the LWO,
regarding if Perez was supposed to win, I think so because her music played right away.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we're supposed to win in the moment.
Because I also thought that maybe Dame was supposed to get in there and break up the pin or pull the ref. I was waiting for Dallas Irvin's foot to get dragged out by Izzy Dame. But I think because of the fact that Perez's music played literally immediately after the pin, that she was actually scheduled to win the match tonight.
Yeah, yep. When I was questioning it, I'm talking more about, you know, was it a decision made earlier today, not necessarily in the moment during the match. So
sure.
Cool. I agree with you. I think if we saw a delay in her music, then that might have been a little telling. But I'll take your word for it, because I don't remember what the delay was from the three count to her music, but I will take your word for it. All right, let's keep moving on here. Let's talk about Trey Bearhill versus Dijak. We're going to work backwards here through Kelly's report. So Trey Bearhill versus Dijak. We saw earlier in the night, Eddie Thorpe and Trey Bearhill, obviously both of Native American descent, acknowledging the fact that they're both of Native American descent. I believe they both said which tribe they're from. I don't remember what it was off the top of my head. But they both, acknowledged that they were from a tribe and whatnot. And basically said that they need to look out for one another. They need to look out for their people, against people like Dijak, who then walked into the frame. He basically squared up with Trey Bearhill, and match was made for a little bit later on in the night. So we saw that. We saw Dijak go over in 4 minutes and 35 seconds. This was a little bit strange, too. Joe Gacy all of a sudden shows up on commentary shortly before this match, and he's got some slicked back hair a la Vince McMahon from his early his early days as a commentator before we actually knew he was the owner of the company. He was wearing the jacket with the old school WWE logo on it.
Oversized.
A bit oversized. It looked like, he raided his dad's, closet or something like that. Kind of like JBL's pants. It always looks huge. Had to throw a shot in a JBL because, well, hey, we're going to be able to do it again later too. So if I can get two in, why not? I thought this was a fun match for what it was. 4 minutes, 35 seconds. I like the fact that Joe Gacy, I don't know why he's necessarily involved here, but maybe there's something I'm forgetting. Obviously, Joe Gacy's had a very interesting an interesting character change and character development. So maybe he doesn't even know why he was out there, but wound up with the referee's back turned. He wound up giving Dijak a headbutt outside the ring. Thought maybe that might shift things in Trey Bearhill's favor. One of these days my mouth will work completely through a sentence. But I thought that headbutt might swing things in Bearhill's favor. It did not, unfortunately. And we saw Dijak hit his finisher for the win. Let me throw it over to you to talk about this, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, a good little segment in the back between these two. Bear Hill still a little green, obviously, on the mic. Came off a little bit unnatural when he was standing up to Dijak. The anger seemed genuine, but what he was saying didn't come off as if he was into it. It just sounded a bit put on. That aside, this match was just big dudes hitting the hell out of each other. And, you know, Bear Hill still has a long way to go in the ring, but he was impressive enough tonight to see why they initially had him in the breakout tournament. And now, you know, after the match, too, he got attacked by Alexis King. After Gacy suddenly attacked Dijak. So we got all this stuff going on. They've been able to keep Bear Hill in stories and in angles even without – this is his first match, I believe. So he's been involved with Alexis King for several weeks, almost a month. And now he has a match with Dijak, and they go from there. So, like that part, Gacy, to me, was just – hilarious, because all of a sudden it's just, we're going to have an exciting main event tonight, right, Vic? And he's like, yeah. And then Vic called him their broadcast partner, and Booker T's like, what are you doing? So
what,
I thought that was...
What I really want to know is because they looked so confused that he was sitting there, but he was in the middle of them. They would have had to move, and they would have had to move their chairs. It was a little immersion breaking, guys.
I mean, maybe they got up to go take a break real quick during the commercial, and just a little bit. No, but for Bear Hill, yeah, ways to go, but there's potential, and I think that when it comes to Dijak, hey, he got a win, and I mean not necessarily a few, but he got a win in a match. That's, you know, better
something
than what usually happens with Dijak in a match, so or in a feud. So yeah, good for everybody involved here. That, you know, someone like Alexis King, even though he wasn't in a match, he was still able to get TV time. You had Joe Gacy continuing whatever he's doing, which is much more entertaining than whatever he was doing before. So yeah, I think all in all, a serviceable match, perfect for TV. Nothing bad, nothing too great, just there, and it worked for what it was there for in terms of getting Dijak to win, advancing the story between Bear Hill and King, and then starting the story with Gacy and Dijak.
All right, and I just brought back the phone lines because I wasn't paying attention, and I know last night Sean told me he'd be calling in, so Sean, what's going on?
Not much, Nate. It's a man. Just I had. I told you I was like, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna call him 2 days in a row. I don't get to watch NXT live very often, really at all. And I mean, I get to watch it here and there. I wish I could watch it more than I do because I want to keep up with everybody involved because I just like WWE. I like everything they've done, and NXT is the same thing. I really enjoy most of what they do. I mean, it's not great all the time, but it's good. I like it. I like a lot of the characters. So, Bruce, it's been a while, man. How are you, sir? We're good to talk to both of you.
I'm doing well, thank you. It has been a long time. Hope you're doing well, too.
Yes, I am.
Indeed.
Yes,
what do you got for us,
Sean? I wanted to say, now seeing Roxanne win makes me want to go to Clarksville because I'm not, like, that far away from Clarksville. I was thinking about going to the show. I was like, man, I would want to really go to the show. And then I'm like, man, Roxanne Perez against Lyra Valkyrie, like, that's cool. I'd be up for that. So I wanted to talk about, I mean, you already talked about, like, Roxanne winning and all that kind of thing. But I do think you guys are right. I the more I've thought about it, the more I've seen her, even though I think she is such a natural babyface, I do think, you know, having an NXT heel run would be good for her and would kind of see, okay, because you bring her on the main roster as a heel, I think that could do wonders. And then whenever she's on the main roster and she does turn face, I think that would be a good thing for her. I think it would help her move because she's already great in the ring, but to just kind of help the mic skills and kind of develop some different mic skills, I think could be good for her. But I wanted to talk about did you guys talk about the, like, having the stipulation of the last four in it becoming a fatal four way? Cause that was, I don't know how to feel about that. I was like, man, to me, if you're just going to do a battle royal, I would just rather do a battle royal. But at the same time, I it was kind of different and kind of interesting that they did that. What did you guys think about that stipulation? Was it interesting? Did you like it? Did you not like it? What did you think about that perspective from it?
Yeah, we did bring it up a little bit. I think before I saw your number in the in the listener queue there, but personally, I liked it because it was different. With the as I said a little bit ago, like with the battle royal, obviously just trying to throw people over the top rope, things can get sometimes, especially towards the beginning of the match, it just kind of looks like choreographed and staged a lot of times with people like really looking like they're really trying to huck people over the top rope, and it's like, eh, are you though? So I kind of liked the different aspect of this. You get to a certain point in the match, boom, stipulation changes, and now if you think of it from like a kayfabe perspective, it's like, okay, now the competitors, that their mind has to switch gears, and they've got to change the way that they're thinking about winning this match or something, something like that. So I kind of liked it. I don't remember them doing this before in WWE. They certainly may have, and I'm just forgetting or not thinking about it. But, I don't know if they should do this every single time for Battle Royal, but I personally like the stipulation. Bruce, how about yourself?
So I'm fairly certain that this is something that's been done in TNA and Impact multiple times, and that's sort of the first time that I saw it.
I know they've done it in Impact.
Yeah. So for me, I like it too, because when you get to the Fatal 4-Way part, at least, it makes the victory and the contendership a little more legitimate than just throwing somebody over the top rope. And with the 4 tonight, it definitely, that's why I'm saying, James or Jordan should definitely have been the ones to go over, because, and I think that Roxanne Perez should have been the one to actually to eat the pin here if it was one of those two, because it just gives a little more legitimacy to the victory, to the victor, for having to actually get the pin or the submission instead of just throwing someone over the top rope. And so I like the difference that you get, and I like how the match changes, the pace of the match changes when you get down to the last, even the last six or five, the match suddenly, the pace shifted because we're getting down to the last little bit here, and everyone knows, oh, we're almost going to be at that point now. And once I get to that point, I have a better shot than if I suddenly just, I'm not looking behind me and suddenly someone throws me over the top rope, right? So to me, I like it better. Now, do you need it for every single battle royal? Probably not, but if you don't have a legitimate contender, which is usually what these battle royals are booked for, then it's probably better to do that than just have the over-the-top battle royal. I'd prefer a number one contenders tournament, but I know that there are people that are tired of all the tournaments that we've seen, not just in NXT, but also in other wrestling promotions in North America. So, for me, I wouldn't mind if they just kept this pattern up and having the Fatal 4-Way at the end of the Battle Royal. But I also want them to stop doing Battle Royals only for the women's contendership and start doing some for the men's contendership, because I feel like we only see these 20 women, these 20-person Battle Royals when it comes to the women needing a contender and not the men.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be right. I hadn't really thought about that. Sean, let me throw it back to you for any follow-up or something else.
Yeah, I was thinking, because when they got to the Final Four, what I'd seen, I've liked what they've done with Kiana recently. Even the thing with Izzy is like, okay. But I thought, well, maybe they'll go with Kiana just because she is a pure heel right now, and like I'll just do the heel face for sure, face matchup, and we'll kind of go with that, and we'll kind of see. But when they brought up, that Roxy, hadn't actually lost the NXT title, I was like, okay, well, I'm glad they brought that up, and, that made a lot of sense, like, why they would go to that, and if they're turning Roxy heel, that'd be, obviously a fine way to do that. The one thing I didn't like, I'm with you guys about Kalani. I've really liked Kalani a lot from what I've seen, but I don't want her to be, they brought up the stuff with her and Kofi when she got, was on the score, on the announce table when she got, I don't want her to do that because I don't want that to be what she's known for. Like, I want her to be known for what she does in the ring and for who she is and, like, the story they're telling with her, not this, oh, she's going to be Kofi, she's going to do this crazy stuff in a battle royal. Like, I didn't like that. And then, of course, when she's on the side, the jump from that to the step was, like, the easiest jump in the world. Like, I could have done that. feel like they were making it such a big deal that she did that. I'm like, okay, like, most people could jump from that far. I mean, if it was, like, what Naomi did back in the day, like, that's something else. But, like, from what Kalani did, it was like, okay, that's not that big of a deal. So they kind of overhyped that a little much. And I was like, all right, I don't really need that for her. What do you think about Kiana? And do you think she's due for a title shot here sometime soon? Because I like what they've done with Kiana. I think she's in a pretty good place from what I've seen.
Yeah, and personally, I would love to see her kind of get back into the title picture, at some point in the near future. I think against the babyface, champion. So, whether Lyra retains and, maybe she faces James a little bit later on, or it's the next, babyface champion. Heck, maybe it's Roxy, if she wins and stays babyface. Kiana James, I think it was a women's battle royal where she wound up in the final four like a year and a half ago or something like that, if I'm not mistaken, and kind of blew us all out of the water at that point. And I mean, ever since then, she's just been on a fantastic trajectory, both in the ring and behind the scenes, backstage rather, in the mic work and whatnot. So I would love to see her kind of get back up to that point, and be a bit more of a main event player, in NXT, because I think she's got a lot of potential, and I think once she hits the main roster, unfortunately a lot of NXT superstars, they hit the main roster and they're kind of lost in the shuffle for a little while, which I'm sure she probably will be. I think she has the potential to kind of break out from that pack and be a, maybe upper card, type gatekeeper for the main event scene. Bruce, throw it over to you.
Yeah. So I didn't even get to see the Kalani Jordan jump from the thing because of having the internet player and not having the spare split screen.
Oh no, they didn't show that on split screen. They actually showed they showed that in a replay when they came back from commercial break.
Oh, I must have just come back from from whatever I was doing during commercial break to have not seen that. Well,
it
that
wasn't
aside,
much.
well, Kiana James, yeah. So Nate, you might be thinking of last year's or not last year's, but the first Iron Survivor Challenge, because
that's exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, because that's where we're just like, wow. So Roxanne won, but the person that we remember the most out of that match is Kiana James. And so that was just a reaffirmation for me because, again, I've been touting her bona fides, however you say that. Since the breakout tournament that Roxanne Perez won, I said, watch out for Fallon Henley and Kiana James, and here we are, however many months later. Year, 2 years later, and they are an integral, as Vic Joseph said, they are an integral part of the women's division. I wouldn't necessarily say pillars, but they've been an integral part of what this women's division has become, and a lot because of what they've done throughout their time in NXT. And, it was tough for them because they started out in the 2.0 era and they've transitioned. And talk about Kiana James. Another thing that we should discuss is, her character development has come so far from that one note, I'm a rich business owner, CEO lady, to actually having depth and nuance to it. And yeah, she lost G or whatever, and now she has Izzy, which will help. But I think that when we look at people within the women's division, she has one of the more fully developed characters on the brand right now on the show. And that's another reason why I feel like Roxanne Perez was not necessarily the right decision, because going back, we'll get to this later with Josh Briggs, but I mean, really, what is Roxanne Perez right now, right? The Prodigy, cool. That was what she was as a babyface, and if she's still a babyface, okay, but what else right now is there about Roxanne Perez, right? And I feel like with Kiana James, we actually have that. We have so much more of her character development that we don't have with a Roxanne Perez or even a Kalani Jordan, who can use more of that. But that's why I feel like she could have been a good choice, because you could have seen some of that in the ring or in the build up next week to hype the match in 2 weeks. So that's just another thing about James and Perez and everybody involved in the match.
Sean, any follow up or something else?
No, that was great. The last thing I guess I was just going to bring up was, I think I told, I don't know if I told you, Nate, but Bruce, I wanted to hear what you thought about this. I don't know if you got to hear me on the post shows, but I was talking about how I really wish, like, I love Carmelo. I love him. Like, no doubt about it. And I love what he's doing with Trick, and Trick has gotten better, you know. I mean, sometimes I worry about when you have, like, a catchphrase in your song, like, how far you can go with that. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'm kind of worried about that, even though Trick has gotten a lot better with his character and with his, you know, even in the ring, he's gotten a lot better. But I still worry about, you know, the song, like, being the thing that kind of defines you instead of it being you, like, what you do.
Work with Seth Rollins.
I know. Well, right, exactly. That's what I say. I'm like,
it works for Nakamura. I mean,
yeah.
Cody.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, so,
no, I mean, I hear what you're saying.
No, but going back to, I was talking about, because I brought up Carmelo as far as, I wish they wouldn't have brought him up to the main roster at any point yet. I wish they would have kept him in NXT and, like, built to this thing they're doing with Trick, and then whenever it's time for Carmelo to go up to the main roster, he just goes up to the main roster, and they haven't seen him yet on the main roster, and then he becomes a star there. He could still become a star, but I just think, let him run his NXT course, let him do all that, and then just bring him up. I mean, even though he's gotten some good shining on the main roster with some of the matches he's had, but I think losing to KO during the tournament with a broken hand, I don't think helps him. I think that hurts you because you lost to a guy with a broken hand, you know, in storyline. So it's like, how does that help you, you know? But he's had good matches. So I want to hear what you thought about Carmelo, and do you think that hurt him being on the main roster already? And do you think because I think he'll still be a big star either way. I just thought it was weird. I just wish they would do what they do in NXT and then bring you up. Now, does it have to lose on NXT before they go up? No, but at least have him be whatever he's going to be and then let him do his thing, come out right away, you know, flash out of the pan, like, do his thing, become a star. So I wanted to hear what you guys thought about that, and that's, you know, pretty much all I had. I thought it was a good show. I enjoyed getting to watch it. And I hope I get to watch it a little bit more often, at least on DVR, because I like a lot of the characters right now, and I think they're doing some good stuff. But I appreciate you, Bruce. Good to talk to you guys, and appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, of course. Of course, man. Appreciate it, as always. Bruce, we'll start with you this time.
Yeah, so, I mean, going back to when that tournament was announced, I said this is the perfect spot to debut Bron Breakker and have him be the one and maybe get a victory or two and lose in the final or just lose in the second round. So when they announced Carmelo, I was a bit disappointed because he has this whole thing going on with Trick, of course. It's been going on for a long time. It's been the longest story running on NXT, and we've all been looking forward to the build and the climax of this. And they sort of booked him like an upstart face against Kevin Owens, right? So it's just – it sort of goes against the nuance that we're seeing that's being built between him and Trick in these week to week now, whether it's in a match, whether it's these backstage segments like tonight, and I'm sure we'll get to that. Do I think it was a mistake? Not necessarily. I think Breakker should have been, I mean, as entertaining as some of this stuff has been, I feel like Breakker still should have been the person that was chosen to go and be in the tournament. But I do think that I don't think it's going to harm him necessarily in the long run because he wasn't presented as someone who, even though he was the NXT champion, he wasn't presented on SmackDown as someone that was yet at the, you know, the WWE or World Heavyweight Championship level yet. And this was his first big opportunity. And Kevin Owens, of course, is a former world champion, former, like, everything champion. So I think in that regard, it's not going to hurt him too much. And he'll be fine. I just still think, again, the booking decision to me was wrong because it should have been Bron Breakker, regardless of all the stuff that we've seen with him and Baron Corbin. Because it doesn't seem like... Or maybe even you should just put Dijak in there. If there was no plan for that person to go very far, then why waste it on? Then why give that opportunity to someone who's so embroiled in things right now that having that a little detraction from it makes it a bit, you know, comes off as what Sean is talking about as a bit odd or not necessarily the right decision.
Yeah, and you know, I think I'm in agreement with you there. I mean, you know, there's part of me that says, you know, any exposure on TV, you know, main roster WWE for an NXT talent is good. So you know, there's that. But you know, and that was actually going to be my kind of my argument, my point. But then, you know, you said, you know, if you're not going to have, if there's not going to be really a plan or anything, you know, for that person, why put, you know, somebody like Melo in that spot? And I'm kind of like, you know, you're right. I think it would have made more sense probably to put somebody like Dijak or, you know, or Breaker or, God, yeah, I'm trying to think of somebody else, you know, but
Josh
somebody
Briggs.
Josh Briggs. Yeah. You know, somebody that, you know, maybe could have used a little bit of like a, you know, a bit of a rub or something like that. That said, though, I think at the end of the day, the fact that he was introduced to the main roster probably isn't going to hurt him. I mean, admittedly, those matches I've only seen clips here and there of. I haven't actually watched. I haven't really been watching SmackDown a whole heck of a lot. Even on DVR the past few weeks. The thing with it being on Fridays, like I've got other things I want to do on Friday and the weekend and stuff. But no, I mean, the crowd seemed to be, you know, somewhat behind him and things like that. So I think overall, I think he's going to be fine. I don't think it's going to hurt him. Especially if there's a decent amount of time between that match and when he actually debuts. You know, if there's a few months, you know, which it seems like it probably will be, people probably won't even remember the fact that he was in the match. So I think it'll probably be okay. You know, he's a phenomenal talent, and I think WWE knows that they've got something special with Melo. So I'm hoping that they, you know, they keep going in that direction, and it's not going to be, not going to be a fluke or anything like that once we hit the main roster. So, cool. Sean, as always, appreciate it. Thank you very much for calling in, and we look forward to hearing from you next time. So let's keep going here, and we'll talk about, we're going backwards with matches. So Latino World Order, versus Chase University. So it was Joaquin Wilde and Cruz del Toro versus Duke Hudson and Riley Osborne with Andre Chase in their corner. And that was the first match, one of the first rounds for the Dusty Classic. Did see the LWO go over 9:39. And we saw Zelina Vega with them, which is kind of nice to see her back in an NXT arena, even if it was just for, you know, wasn't for a match or anything like that, just kind of a quick little cameo appearance as a manager. But always good to see. Always like to see alumni come back. But no, I mean, I thought this was actually a pretty good match. I'm really impressed with Riley Osborne. You know, we've said that quite a bit over the past, you know, handful of weeks, months. But you know, I think this is a good match for him to shine in. You know, especially with Andre Chase kind of like on the sidelines here and trying to pick up the pieces from this whole, you know, gambling scandal and all of that. I think Riley coming in with that, like, just male cheerleader type attitude. I think it works. I think it works for Chase University. But yeah, like I said, you know, great. I thought this was a great tag team match. Great way to kind of kick off our, kick off the Dusty Classic. You know, going into this, I was a little torn. There was part of me that was thinking Chase University may wind up going over here, considering they're the NXT talents, and the LWO is, you know, main roster talent. But then there was also another part of me going into this match saying, well, LWO is main roster talent, they should go over. So I was a little bit torn on who might win this. Usually I'm pretty good with my predictions, but I actually gave this to Chase University, and I was pleasantly surprised to see LWO pick this up. As much as I love Chase University, I kind of like seeing the LWO show up in NXT. I never wanted to see Legado del Fantasma leave, so you know, I guess if we're getting them in a little bit of a different incarnation, fine by me. Bruce, let me throw it over to you.
I mean, not too much to add aside from the fact that poor LWO, they're the victor, and no one really, I mean, they care about LWO, but they don't really care about them coming out of this match because it's about Chase U, and they're not going to be break for Corbin. So, yeah, the match itself was fine. Riley Osborne's great. We know that. Duke Hudson's great with the power stuff. Andre Chase, the evolvement of his character has been entertaining. And then the reason why I didn't think Chase was actually going to win is we've had these videos the last few weeks where JC James is plotting something with the women of Chase U. And that was further tonight with another NXT Anonymous video showing JC and some getting the name and of some woman and then going for drinks to get her number. So what that means, who knows, but they've had that plan going for a bit. So I figured that meant that there would be no reason for them to win and just give, I guess instead of giving them the hope spot, it would be better for Corbin and Breaker, if that's his name, to go over an established team like LWO instead of a team like Chase U, which, remember, Bron Breakker's had his way with Andre Chase. I'm pretty sure Baron Corbin's had his way with Andre Chase, too, so there's no reason to go back to that. Whereas LWO versus Breakker and Corbin, it's a fresh team, and it also gives you a more established team for them to be able to then go on to the finals, who they'll probably face Trick and Mello, and I think at that point you have yourself, you know, a nicely established final, and also LWO wouldn't get hurt too much because these are the kind of two of the, Corbin and Breakker are two of the top talent in the men's division right now. So considering the fact that neither of them, I think, ever beat them when they had the chance or even really did much to them when they had the chance, I feel like Breakker and Corbin going over makes a lot of sense. And having LWO with the team on the other side also makes more sense than having Chase U on the other side.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Trick Mello and Corbin and Breakker. But, yeah, but we'll see. Actually, I got to look at the bracket. Is that even possible with the bracket? I haven't even looked at it. But still, that probably makes the most sense, and it kind of seems like the direction that they're going. So, all right, let's keep on moving. Let me just check. Okay, wanted to make sure we didn't have anybody else in the caller queue here. Okay, so we're going to talk about Ridge Holland versus Joe Coffey with Gallus by his side there. Ridge Holland went over very quickly, 2:27
yeah.
seconds. Yeah, so I don't even really remember this match. I'll be completely honest with you.
Uh-huh.
It just happened. I'm not really sure why Coffey got squat. I feel like Gallus in general is just, man, they have fallen from grace. Gallus in NXT UK, dominant, imposing. They come into NXT, dominant, imposing. And then they kind of were gone for a little while off TV. Then they come, there was some sort of stipulation to match, said they needed to go away for a while. I forget what it was, but then they come back and they've just seemed like they've had the sails, just the wind taken out of their sails. I don't quite get it. I mean, obviously they did come back and gang up on Ridge Holland, after the match, and they stood tall, to close the segment. The three of them standing over Ridge's lifeless body. But at the same time, yes, a visual win is good, but man, Gallus, Joe Coffey, I mean, they just losing match after match after match. I really feel like if you want to get anything out of Gallus at this point, build him up. Bruce, let me throw it to you.
Considering that they devoted a whole 3-minute segment last week to these two in the back, this was all we got out of the match. I was shocked at how quickly, and it seemed to end abruptly too, just out of nowhere. And sure, I guess it was to set up this end of the post match beatdown. But one, there was no reaction for Ridge Holland. Two, there was no reaction for Gallus and Joe Coffey. And three, there wasn't enough time in the match for there to be an actual story built up. And the story that we have been building with Rich Holland is that he's someone who potentially is dangerous in the ring and injures people. And I don't think we had any time to build to a story about that, even though we go back to last week when Joe Coffey was mocking Rich Holland, which led to the creation of this match. It was part of the fact, going back to his sit-down interview with I think it was Kelly Kincaid, about how that's not who he is. He's not trying to hurt people. It's just to hurt business, yada, yada, yada. I mean, where was that in this match tonight? And maybe it was just so fast, I don't remember it, but I'm feeling like there was a big missed opportunity here. And, okay, you show the beatdown so that people understand Rich Holland has no friends in the back. And maybe it's because he hurts people in the ring. Maybe it's because he's down here and his former tag team partner is still on SmackDown. Let's not talk about that, I guess. But I'm just saying there just wasn't enough. I think this was the one part tonight where they didn't do enough of the building between A and B to get you to C. And that, to me, I'm not sure if they should just scrap it at this point. I'm not sure if it's salvageable. I'm not sure if Rich Holland was the person they should have spent this kind of equity and time on, because there's just nothing right now.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with you there. All right, I'm gonna actually throw it to you real quick. Lyra Valkyria, Tatum Paxley, Lola Vice, Electra Lopez. I'm having some headset issues, so I'm gonna throw it to you to talk about it, and hopefully I'll be back by the time you're done.
All right, so a decent match here between the four women. Tatum Paxley, I think, has been continually entertaining in her role here. She came out of the crowd while Valkyria was entering, and she had on basically a replica of Valkyria's gear in just a little bit of a Tatum Paxley fashion with the feathered shoulder piece and everything, and stalked her. But followed her from the crowd into the ring a little creepily and was just laying at her feet. When Valkyria finally noticed her, she reacted to shock, and they went from there. Good partnering here, and Paxley ended up somehow, she saved Valkyria, took a blow, and yet ended up on top of Electra Lopez to get the pinfall victory for their team. So it was kind of funny because Valkyria just looked down and Paxley still just kind of unconscious while Lopez is trying to get Paxley's body off of her. And then on commentary, they were talking about, oh, is there dissension between Lopez and Vice? And we saw that make its head in the Women's Battle Royal later on, where Vice eliminated Lopez, and then Lopez was eliminated by Thea Hale, I believe. And then Lopez and Vice started brawling on the outside. So all in all, you have a good, you know, a serviceable women's tag team match between these four women. What this means for Tatum Paxley and Lyra Valkyria is what I'm interested in, because Valkyria has her match with Roxanne Perez in 2 weeks. Tatum Paxley presumably will be there to support her somehow, some way, even if Valkyria is not necessarily wanting of that help. And then does this mean that eventually Paxley gets a title shot from Valkyria, or is it more so that they're going to go for the Women's Tag Team Championship and have Lyra Valkyria become a dual champion, which is also a story they're kind of doing right now with Trick Williams, and then Carmella, who's becoming a Triple Crown champion. So I'm just interested to see what the long-term vision and goal is here between, or for Paxley and Valkyria. But and then I think Lola Vice not being associated with Electra Lopez anymore means that with that contract in hand, she is more likely now to start making her way up the singles division, maybe be the next Blair Davenport or in that vein. And she might be the one that actually defeats Valkyria. Maybe she cashes in an Obafemi style, or maybe she calls her shot. But I think now we're going to see sort of the singles emphasis for Lola Vice coming forward. I was just trying to find a different word to use in breakout.
No, I hear you. No, but I agree. I think, you know, after what we saw, you know, in the battle royal between her and Lopez, I think it's time for her to shine in the singles world and see if she can sink or swim. So hopefully it's swim. Looking forward to see what she's able to do and you know, hopefully, cashing in that breakout contract and, you know, kind of actually Yeah, you know, that's even something we haven't really talked about. But, I mean, she could potentially, you know, cash that in even at Vengeance Day. Although I doubt it because she's probably going to want to go – probably going to wind up in a match against Lopez at Judgment Day, but or Vengeance Day, rather. But yeah, that's still something that's floating out there. Still something we got to think about, just like Damian Priest and his Money in the Bank. All right, let's talk about our opening match tonight. Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes versus Anofe Blade. The first round, Dusty match, Dusty Classic. Saw Trick and Mello go over in 12 minutes and 12 seconds. Surprise, surprise. I'm sure anybody who saw these four names on paper knew which team was going to be winning. That said, though, I got to give credit to Idris Anofe and Malik Blade. I think they really held their own with Mello and Trick. You know, as we've talked about quite a bit with, you know, over the, I don't know, past year and a half or so with Idris Anofe and Malik Blade, they've kind of really come into their own. They're great performers. I'm really hoping to see some more out of them in 2024. I think it's kind of their time to shine, you know, especially with, you know, Briggs and Jensen kind of dissolving. So there's kind of more room for tag teams to flourish right now. So I think it's good, but that said, as much as I like them and I wish that they would move up the ladder a little bit, not everybody can move up the ladder. So like I said, you know, anybody that saw this on paper kind of knew what the outcome was going to be. I thought it might have been the opening sequence in the match. If not, it was shortly thereafter. But it saw Blade and Hayes kind of going toe to toe, kind of flip for flip. And, you know, then they stood kind of like, it almost reminded me of like Will Ospreay and Ricochet kind of doing their, not all of their flips, but just their final land and then like staring at one another in a very, very watered down way here tonight in NXT. But that was like, that was what went through my head at the time anyway. You know, so like I said, I thought Mello and Hayes were pretty giving tonight. And I think even though Anofe and Blade lost, I think that their stock was built up pretty big, you know, in what they were able to do and deliver against, you know, two of the top stars in the brand. Bruce, over to you.
Yeah, Malik Blade had a pretty impressive lowdown tonight on Carmelo Hayes as well. So I think it was Carmelo Hayes hit it on. But
I think it was.
Yeah, you like you said, we know the final is going to be Breaker Corbin versus Trick and Mello, and so not too much of suspense for this match. However, because something is predictable doesn't mean it can't be entertaining, right? And I think we had that here. It's a good opener between these four gentlemen. I was trying to think how many people are in a tag team match. Right, four. So good match, a lot of good action, good chemistry shown between these four gentlemen, these four wrestlers. And while Blade and Anofe lost here, like Nada said, they have been getting more and more character development time, more camera time, more promo time, I should say, than they had in the past. And so, you know, no more Blaze and Jensen, like you said, Gallus's downfall. This means that there's room for another team to step up, and another team to step up would be, you know, Fae and Blade. Now, I mean, I kind of want to rope in the Dragunov segment right here, too, because of how it pertains to Trick and Mello and how he came in and basically said, oh, hey, you know, Trick and Mello were in the locker room, and then Dragunov suddenly appeared and said, hey, sorry, Trick, I want to apologize to you because I wasn't able to get cleared. I wanted to wrestle, but the medical team wouldn't clear me, and now I'm cleared, so you're going to get your title shot at Vengeance Day. And Trick, of course, is all excited. Let's do this. And then Mello reminded him, like, hey, man, that's the same night that we have the finals of the Dusty Classic, right? You know, presuming they're going to be there, which we all do, and, you know, I think they're definitely going to win. It's a thing I didn't – I'm wondering why they didn't bring up where – I guess it was implied, but they should have, I think, explicitly stated was, dude, this means you're going to have to pull double duty. Can you do that in one night? Can you do two title matches in one night, right? And I don't think that point was emphasized enough to me for Melo to emphasize to Trick just how difficult that would be, because you're not just doing one title match, you're doing a second one. The second one is for the biggest title on the brand, on the men's division, right? So I think that was something that needed to be emphasized more by Carmelo Hayes, and it wasn't. But, of course, for him, it's more worried about, will Trick's mind be there for us to be able to win this Dusty Classic so I can go on and become a Triple Crown champion? I hope next week that they do a little more of that. Hey, man, you got to have to wrestle two matches. How is that going to affect you? You know, I don't want you thinking about the championship match and then us losing our Dusty Classic, but then I also don't want you to lose your title match kind of thing, right? So it's a tricky game they're going to have to play. And I think with Melo's character right now being sort of a tweener because he's trying to use Trick to his purposes to further his own ends while still maintaining that trust and friendship, I think is a perfect kind of character to have that sort of discussion with him and talk about, hey, look, I need you for this, and I'll be there for you at this point, but, you know, maybe something happens and he's not necessarily there in that cost Trick. Something like that. I just feel like it needs to be emphasized more.
All right, so let's talk some more about some segments here. So I'm going to throw a few at you rapid fire, and we'll go from there. So we saw Kelly Kincaid. I guess this is kind of hyping up the Battle Royal, but Kelly Kincaid interviewing Fallon Henley about the Battle Royal. And she was talking, basically kind of hyping up the fact that she beat Tiffany Stratton. She was pretty sure that everybody liked watching Tiffany Stratton get humiliated on the farm last week. She said she had three words for everybody, and that was yeehaw, bitch. So, you know, they got their obligatory bitch in on a PG show. We had a couple segments with Obafemi. There was a video package hyping up Obafemi's win over Dragon Lee last week after Dragon Lee successfully defended against Dexter Lumis.
Dexter Lumis. Wow.
As it came out of my mouth, Lexus King. That's not even close. There's an L, but wow. Lexus King, after he successfully defended against Lexus King, Obafemi cashed in his breakout contract and challenged for North American title and won. So they did a little recap of that. Obafemi then hit the ring in his street clothes. He had his belt over his shoulder, grabbed a mic, and he said that many are surprised to see him as North American champion, but there was a prophecy long foretold that he'd be the juggernaut drenched in gold. He invoked the word in his native tongue, and the crowd kind of got behind him a little bit, which you know, seemed to tickle him a little bit there. Dragon Lee came out and said that he really couldn't be mad at Femi because Femi's clearly hungry, but he said that he wanted to basically be the first one to challenge him in an open challenge for the North American title. And Obafemi was like, nah, fam, we're not doing that anymore. Looks like open challenges are now closed. So Lee was like, hey, give me a rematch Vengeance Day. That's where Femi left it. He's like, hey, you don't get the side anymore. But my guess is we'll probably wind up seeing them at Vengeance Day. Let me throw it to you on those segments there.
Yeah, good promo by Fallon Henley. Again, just the development, and just toot my own horn again for calling it out back then. With Obafemi, yeah, just the man just oozes such charisma. He's just so cool, as Kelly likes to say. He might just be the coolest guy in professional wrestling. And I'm going to shout out my homie here. I'm not going to say his real name just so he doesn't get any people doing that. But y'all, if any of y'all know Young Poppy Quality, he said, I've seen enough. Book this man to win the Royal Rumble. I'm pretty much at that point, too. Book this man to win everything. I mean, he's just He's just, he stands there and he speaks, and I just want to hear every single thing he says. And he's just enthralling in a way that we don't have with many wrestlers right now in NXT, especially someone of his magnitude, his size, his just everything, his ability. I think what he has is what Dijak tries to put out in his character, if that makes sense. So I feel like Femi is, and I like what he did here with Dragon Lee. He said, hey, you do that open challenge crap. That's open challenges are closed. I ain't doing that. And then he told him, look, you don't get to decide anymore. I'll think about it. And I feel like him just, it's still, so Kelly kept asking, is he a face? Is he a heel? And there's still enough of nuance here that you're not really sure if he's either, right? Because face too, you could legitimately be like, nah, man, look, you did that, but that's not me, right? And I'm going to, you know, you don't make a shot. You don't call the shots no more. We'll see what happens. I feel like there's still enough ambiguity there for him to eventually make that decision in a match, which I'm guessing will be against Dragon Lee, as you said, at Vengeance Day. But yeah, Oba Femi is just really, really cool. And that title looks so small on his shoulders. So yeah.
Oh my God, it does.
Just,
and considering that's like the widest strap they've got.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's one that stays kind of, it doesn't taper or anything. So, yeah, it just, all in all, a good night for Oba Femi. He didn't even do anything in the ring. He just cut a promo. And if you have a good night from just cutting a promo, you're doing the stuff good.
Damn right. Damn right. So let's see. We saw Ariana Grace make a speech to the locker room, which kind of dragged on. It was almost a minute, if memory serves. And when she went to go thank them at the end, she noticed everybody was gone because nobody wanted to listen to her anymore. We saw NXT Anonymous talking to all of the girls backstage from Chase University, kind of looking like she's got some sort of something going on with all of them, as we kind of talked about a little bit earlier tonight. We also saw Kalani Jordan and Brinley Reese backstage, kind of getting ready for the tournament. We'll talk about one more. And this was probably my favorite segment of the show. Kelly Kincaid was interviewing Baron Corbin backstage, talking about him and Bron Breakker in the Dusty Classic. Bron Breakker kind of comes up, shows up, winds up. Almost like, I feel like he was, this is almost a brand new character for Bron Breakker. He's kind of taken that badass that he's been since turning heel, and we're kind of seeing some comedy out of him. I thought this was actually great. I think this is probably the best that I've seen Corbin Breakker on the mic ever, honestly. But basically, he shows up and he's like, yeah, I've got a name for us. We're the Wolf Dogs, which kind of makes sense, the lone wolf and,
so
you know, the dog. But, oh, God, Bruce just said it. It's so bad. And it was meant to be. And Corbin, like, you know, was just going at him, making fun of him with the name over and over again. And then he's like, come on, you're supposed to be the creative one. Give me another name. And he's like, the Wild Boars or something. I think it was the Wild Boars.
Well, you missed the part where he said, how long were you thinking about that? I was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks.
3 or 4 months.
And yeah, Baron Corbin's weeks. Like, we've been a team for two.
And Corbin's Breaker's like, yeah, but it seems like it's been longer. You know, so, like, I think this is honestly some of the best work out of Breakker so far. We wanted to see some character development for Bron Breakker, and it started with the heel turn, and then that started getting a little bit stale. And now this, and I like this oddball pairing between Breakker and Corbin. They play off each other phenomenally. Like, they've got some great chemistry, at least talking, at least speaking. I mean, yeah, in the ring, they had a great match, as good of a match as the two of them are going to give you. But man, on the mic, their chemistry, especially in WWE where it's developmental territory, you don't always get some of the best mic work. I think this was, like I said, I think this is my favorite segment on the show tonight. So yeah, let me throw it to you. So it was the Ariana Grande segment, NXT Anonymous, and what the hell I just talked about with Corbin and Breaker.
I brought up the NXT Anonymous stuff earlier. The backstage segment, I think what was notable is that the first person to speak, I believe, was Stevie Nicks. And or Stevie Nicks. What's her name? Is that her name?
Stevie Turner. I knew exactly what you were talking about. Stevie Nicks, that's not right.
Of course, yeah, it's not Stevie Nicks, Stevie Turner. Stevie Nicks is someone totally different. Was Stevie Turner, and to signify that I guess she's back from whatever her knee injury was. And we had been, and it wasn't me. I think it was you last week who said that you think NXT Anonymous is her, or maybe it was Kelly.
I'll take the credit for it, but it was definitely Kelly.
It was probably Kelly. Yeah, it was definitely Kelly. So, if that's still the case, okay. And then Kelly in his report noted that she was eliminated off screen. So maybe that's their way of doing a soft reintroduction of her and then having the hard reintroduction being the reveal of her as NXT Anonymous. Now, what the future plan is for NXT Anonymous, who knows? But I could see definitely her being there. And then the whole thing with Ariana Grace, the reason why it was so long was because it gave time for everyone to do their things and leave the locker room. I was wondering if there was anybody off screen looking at Last Legend like, come on, get off the screen now. And so, because she was the last one and she was standing there for a while, but I think that the Corbin Breaker segment was entertaining. And I think the dynamic they're trying to have here is that Breaker, for so long, has been the solo, cool, badass guy, right? And I can't believe I'm saying this about Breaker, but this is like the first time he's been with someone who kind of challenges him in those areas. And it's him trying to, I guess, out-cool or out-badass that guy. And it's just coming out more comedic instead of badassery. For us, right? Maybe for him it's different, or what the character's supposed to think. But I think that's where they're trying to go with this, or at least with that segment tonight. And it was pretty funny. I do like Corbin's reaction, like, no, that's just a terrible name. Wild Boars? And I feel like Wild Boar was the name of the NXT UK wrestler, too. So there's, a lot of stuff going on here, but a lot of good stuff. So I can't believe that I am excited and entertained by a team consisting of Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin, yet here we are.
All right, let's we get just a few more segments here to talk about. We saw Adriana Rizzo being nervous about her debut in the Battle Royal, so we saw Stax and D'Angelo trying to talk her up backstage, giving her some examples of the courage that she has shown on the streets. And she said something about throwing bodies over the bridge. They were like, whoa, we don't want to talk about Two Dimes like that, man. but they didn't say Two Dimes or anything like that because, he's not in the company, so of course they're not going to talk about him, but they definitely murdered Two Dimes, guys. They definitely murdered Two Dimes. Then we saw Von Wagner and Noam Dar backstage.
That is not a sentence I thought we would be saying.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was not expecting Noam Dar's next opponent for the Heritage Cup to be Von Wagner, but here we are. Looks like that's probably what's going to happen. This segment was interesting because Von Wagner actually completely suck here.
It also made it seem like he's kind of cunning.
Yeah, like it was a big shift, I think, for this character. Like the way he kind of talked tonight, he almost seemed like
more natural.
That was a word I was looking for, and I couldn't think of it because I'm like, he always sounds like he's scripted, like really scripted. But tonight it just seemed like he was loose. He was having fun and just enjoying himself.
Yeah.
Like he didn't seem like, you know, the rigid Cal Bloom that we've, you know, seen playing Von Wagner. It's like he just felt like he was into it, and he's finally become Von Wagner, you know? So I'm big props there to him tonight. We saw, I mentioned him once earlier tonight, but we saw JBL approach Josh Briggs backstage and kind of just give him a bit of a pep talk, stuff he's, I think, already said to Josh Briggs in the past, you know, basically saying like, hey, you know, I used to drink beer and play poker with Farouk backstage in the APA. Didn't quite mention names and things, but, you know, that's basically what he said. You know, but he's like, then I had to break out on my own and I became the wrestling god. And that's what I expect you to do, in so many words.
Well,
yeah, Josh,
he said the old, good old fashioned, who is Josh Briggs question? Who is Seth Rollins?
Yep. God, that's the second. I don't want to talk about that. I talked about that yesterday, with Wade, who is Seth Rollins. But yeah, no, yeah. So you kind of talk about who is Josh Briggs, and he's like, you know, yeah, actually, that's right. Yeah, he's like, I became a wrestling god. You need to figure out who you're going to become. In so many words, he said it more eloquently than I did, which is funny because it's JBL's trying to speak eloquently. But, whatever. Yeah, so there was that segment. Josh Briggs was kind of appreciative, and that was about it. We also saw the No Quarter Catch Crew hype segment. You know, Drew Gulak and everybody else kind of just talking about how their losses have been unacceptable, and basically like, hey, we're going to come back better than ever, and kind of trying to hype them up a bit more. But you know, they're kind of just this, I guess, this year's version of Diamond Mine. And, you know, Diamond Mine, as much as I liked them, they never really, I don't say never really went anywhere, but they could have been so much more than what they were. All right. Yeah. So anything on these last few segments?
I'm really just kind of touch on the Josh Briggs JBL segment, because again, this is something I wrote in my report last week. I said, oh, do not be surprised. And I think I even said it on the pod.
You did. As soon as JBL walked into frame, I was like, he called it.
Yeah, I said, don't be surprised if all of a sudden we see Josh Briggs being mentored by or managed by JBL. And while it's a slight little thing right now, he got a bit of mentorship from JBL tonight. And honestly, how do I put this? The fact that, okay, you have the connection from him making the selection of Briggs for the qualifiers Iron Survivor Challenge, and JBL brought that up tonight too. However, there's no other reason for JBL to have been on the show at all unless you're going to have him do something more with Josh Briggs than just popping up right here and say, what are you going to be, right? So I have a feeling there's going to be more to this, and that JBL will actually end up being a manager for Josh Briggs. He's been using the clothesline from hell as his finisher. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts adding in the fall-away slam, if he already hasn't, to his repertoire. And to me, Josh Briggs, we've been talking about it. That guy has a lot of potential, right? He's a former Evolved champion. We bring it up constantly, yada, yada, yada. Someone like JBL as his manager, I think, could really do wonders for him in terms of taking him to that next level as a singles wrestler, right? NXT is not afraid of using managers. Generally, we see that in the tag team division more so than in the singles division. But I think that they could do it here, and it would really work because of not just JBL having the longest modern reign up until I think it was CM Punk as a WWE champion, as a world champion, but that connection from the Iron Survivor Challenge qualifying match, the selection, and the fact that their characters kind of mesh a bit. They're both, I think Briggs is from Texas, so they're both Texans, and they're both from the South at least, and they both have sort of a cowboy-ish aesthetic to them. I feel like it's a great pairing, and it's not surprising to me that they're trying it. And, you know, as much as we don't like JBL, the person, he just came off, you know, as a professional, just really good here. And so, to me, I really feel like if you want to take the next step with Josh Briggs, if you want to go back to him being sort of in that Evolved Championship level, then have him paired with JBL and go from there.
All right. I think that is going to bring us to the end of our show, guys. And I'm surprised because we got this done really quick tonight, 11:38 here in good old New England. So I get to go to bed early. That's awesome. So I'm Nate Lindberg. You can check out the things that I do at natelindberg.com. I was on the post show with Wade last night after Raw, where we We did have breaking news. We kind of broke the news of Seth Rollins' knee injury, which I thought was kind of cool. I've never been on a show where we broke something before, other than, you know, like, I don't know, my ego. Bruce, who are you?
I didn't know you had an ego to break. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253, and my report will be up next week for the go-home show for Vengeance Day.
Yes, the go-home show for Vengeance Day. And, yeah, we'll be back to talk about that. Hopefully Kelly will be back with us to so we get the entire gang of idiots to talk about what's going on before Judgment Day. Judgment Day is a tag team. It used to be a pay-per-view. Vengeance Day. All right, guys. Well, now that I've got my names correct, we'll see you next week. Take care.